morning, everybody. My name is Sonny, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Sonny.
And thank you for that glowing introduction, Em. I didn't know I had a host till this morning. For a fat boy, he ain't bad. I want to thank the committee, and where's Beverly? Thank you, honey, for asking me to come over here. It's the first time that anybody asked me to come speak somewhere that it wasn't a year or two or three ahead of time. You know, last month I was in Oklahoma City, and they called me 3 years ago. And I asked them, what happened to a day at a time? God, they said, Sonny, you know, you're so busy, it's hard to get a hold of him. We want to book you ahead. I said, I'll tell you what, man. If I'm still alive and I can still talk, I'll be more than glad to be there. And, you know, I had a good time there. Met some good friends. It's been a real, real pleasure to be here this weekend. And I want to tell you that if you haven't heard the message of Alcoholics Anonymous this weekend, I don't know what the hell you're listening to. Because I did. One of my favorite people opened this convention. Such a sweetheart. And coming from where she came from. I love to listen to her speak. Because she comes up here behind this podium and you don't know what to expect. And when she opens her mouth, I turn around and I look at the people. And they're beautiful lady. Beautiful lady. Sharon, thank you for this morning. Thank you very much. And Francine and Annie. Annie and I go way back. Probably about 16 years. And that's what I love about going out on the circuit to speak is I get to see the people that I haven't seen for a long time. You know? And I get to still share in their lives because I get updated on what's going on with them. You know? I love Alcoholics Anonymous. And if you don't, you're in the wrong room. Things can't be this bad at home. I'll tell you. Some friends of mine came up with me. They'd never been to anything like this before. And I'm going to lock them in the lockbox underneath the motorhome going home. I just love being sober. I really do. And I may fool around and get emotional up here, but don't anybody say I'm a sissy. I probably am, but I don't like to hear it. I want to tell you that what you see up here this morning is not what I was when I got here. When I came out of the penitentiary, on July the 7th, 1977, I had hair down past my ass. I had a beard that when I sat down, it laid in my lap. And I had just done 25 straight years. And 2.5 of that was spent on death row. And I want to tell you that I didn't like any of you. The reason I didn't like you was because you intimidated me. And there was a lot of people thought I intimidated them. But you people scared the shit out of me. I would sit down in a meeting and throw my hair over the back of the chair because I kept sitting on it. And you women that's got long hair know what I'm talking about. And I would throw my hair over there, and the women in the meeting would come up behind me and sit in the chairs behind me and play with my hair. And it was all I could do to keep from reaching around slapping the shit out of them. I came to Alcoholics Anonymous with no understanding at all. I went to prison at 16 for 3 counts of first-degree murder and 2 counts of mayhem. All because of a pool game. I told you I spent 2.5 years. I spent my 17th, 18th, and 19th birthday on death row. My 18th birthday was spent in a death cell waiting for the gas chamber. I never had a clue what was wrong. Not a clue. Nobody ran up to me and said, "Sonny, your problem is you're an alcoholic." Nobody said that. And I want to tell you, too, that I may mention something about drugs, and if I do and it upsets you, tough shit. Because, you see, it's your fault. If I talk about drugs up here, it's your fault. Because none of you came to me and told me, "Sonny, just drink, don't use drugs." You didn't tell me that one day I'm going to be standing in El Paso, Texas, talking to people about alcoholism. I mean, you didn't tell me that. You know, you say, you've got to be a pure alcoholic. I don't know a pure alcoholic. You know? Most of the alcoholics that I know that complain about people who talk about drugs are usually using them. I've met a lot of people in this program that have Valium deficiencies. They have psychiatrists on call. You know, therapists and all that stuff. I'm of the old school of Alcoholics Anonymous. I want to tell you that my birthday, my anniversary, is July 1st, 1976. By the grace of God and the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, it hadn't been necessary for me to take a drink or a drug from that day to this. And I don't know why. I don't know why. I don't even have a desire to drink or to use. I really don't. I know that there's an awful lot of people that are praying for me. Because every time somebody does something wrong to me, I tell them, "You better pray for me." And they say, "Why?" I say, "Because if I get drunk, you're the first sucker I'm coming to see." So I don't think I got anything to worry about. Staying sober. You know. I'm not going to get into the war story of the penitentiary that much. Suffice to say that I spent all that time in there. I came out here and my sponsor told me, he said, "Sonny, we're going to Brentwood to a men's stag. I want you to go." And I said, "No, I'm not going." He said, "What do you mean? You told me you was going to do anything I told you to do." And I said, "I'm not going to a men's stag." He said, "Have you read the book and it talks about contempt prior to investigation?" I said, "Yeah." He said, "Well." I said, "God damn, man. I spent 25 years in a men's stag. I didn't come out here to go to him." He said, "Well, try this one." And I said, "Okay. If you're adamant about it, I'll go." And I went. And we left there and got out in the car and was driving down the freeway home. And he said, "What do you think?" Same way I felt, same before I got there. "I don't like them. If I had a wife or a girlfriend that treated me the way them girls did them guys, I'd kill them. Or run them off, something." You know, I want you to know that. Now, when I came out of the penitentiary, I was 40 years old. And I didn't know nothing about women. Tell you anything you want to know about men. But I didn't know nothing about women. But you couldn't convince me of that. And I was sitting in a meeting one night, And I saw these women come in with guys, and they got a kid, and they look so happy. And Jesus, I thought, man, that's what I've got to do. I got to get me a house in the suburbs, an old lady and a kid and a job. And I saw this girl walk through the door, and she had a little boy. And I said, that's it. So I asked this guy to fix me up with her. And God, man, you got to be careful what you pray for. I had all kinds of signs that told me that it was wrong. But I went ahead anyway. Because I knew better. You know. I had all my buddies that, old motorcycle tramps and stuff, that came in to be my best man and ushers. And we went to this tuxedo shop to get tuxedos. And the guy, there was two guys that ran that shop, and both of them were gay. And we were having the time of our life in there until the girl I was engaged to showed up. And that stopped all the fun. We went to the rehearsal, and her dad came out to the car and was telling me that he didn't like me. And I told him, I don't like you either. You know, but I'm not marrying you. And said something else, and I reached up and knocked him out. Left him laying on the lawn and went back in the church. Sharon asked me, said, where's my dad? I said, he's out there on the lawn. We went ahead and got married. And it was fun. Except that we had to sleep together, and it was okay for about 15, 20 minutes. After that, though, she was one of those people that liked to hold you and hug you and lay next to you and all that shit. And nobody had ever done that with me, yeah, even in the penitentiary. So I'd have to get out of bed and go sleep on the couch. She couldn't understand what was going on. And I knocked her out of bed two or three times. And then one afternoon, about 7 months into the marriage, afternoon, on Sunday afternoon, I was watching a football game on TV, and it was right at the last, you know, couple minutes of the game, right at the crucial part of the game. And she walked in, walked over to TV, and turned it off. I said, are you drunk? She said, no. I said, well, then you better turn that TV back on. And she said, I've been to my sponsors, and my sponsor told me to tell you. So I remembered something that a good friend of mine, Jack Prose, had said. He said, Sonny, you don't hit people in the program anymore. I said, what about my wife? He said, no, because she's one of God's kids too. He said, what you do is you tell them you're going to the store. I said, I'm not going to no goddamn store. He said, go to the store. And I said, what for? He said, get some bread and milk. And don't come back. So I went outside, and she said, where are you going? I said, I'm going to the store. She said, what for? I said, I'm going to get some bread and milk. She said, we got bread and milk. I said, no, I'm going to get some different kind. So I went out and got my car, and I drove off. I haven't been back since. It was so easy. And then she sued me for divorce and took me to court, and I don't like to go to court. I don't have much luck there. And so I'm real nervous when I'm in court. I had a good attorney, and they told me, don't worry about nothing. We'll take care of everything, sonny. So all right, and her attorney came over and squatted down next to me where I was sitting, and he said, you got to sign these papers. And I said, I ain't signing nothing. He said, yeah, you got to sign these papers. I said, fool, I'm going to tell you, get them papers, get away from me. He said it one more time, and I reached out and broke his nose. The judge told me that he appreciated the entertainment in his courtroom that morning, but that he didn't have any other alternative but to give me 30 days in the county jail. And he gave me 30 days in the county jail, and that's probably the best 30 days I ever done. It was easy. I had all my AA books in there. Friends came to visit me, putting money on the books, and I smoked in. They brought me cigarettes. I never had it so good. I thought I was on vacation. And then I came back out to Alcoholics Anonymous, and I tried not to see her too much. And now I see her every once in a while, and when I see her, she will come up to me and say, did you find the store? Not yet. Not yet. The old-timers in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous spoon-fed me this program. They wouldn't let me work these steps for the first 3 years. They told me, don't even think about them steps, sonny. I said, why not? They said, you got to get sweetly reasonable before you can get teachable. And that's what they did. They taught me the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. They taught me the traditions of Alcoholics Anonymous. All those things. The 12 concepts. They taught me all that stuff that I thought was just a bunch of hooey. I had trouble with God. You don't come from where I just came from and not have a problem with God. And I had an old timer walk up to me and said, let's go have some coffee. And we went to have coffee. He reached into his notebook and he gave me a piece of paper, sheet of paper and a pencil, and he said, here, if you had a choice of a God, what would he be? Write it down. So I wrote down what I thought God should be. And he said, after I got done, he looked at it and he read it and he said, well, can you live with that? And I said, yeah. He said, well, then good, that's your God. I thought, wow, that was easy. But are you sure? And he said, yeah. You pray to that God, sonny, and it'll work. Another time I was at a meeting, and I was talking about my God. And this little old lady was sitting there, and after the meeting, she came up to me, and she said, sonny, I want you to go out the car with me. I got a book for you that I want you to read. And I said, oh, man, I'm tired of reading books. She gave me a book entitled, Your God is Too Small. And I read that book. And then she recommended another book, Sermon on the Mount. I read that book. And today, when I stand up and hold hands with everybody, I know what we're talking about. I know what that prayer means. It ain't just a bunch of words. I've learned some things. Yesterday, Al was real nice, and he took me to... I had to threaten him, but Annie had stood up here and said something about, and she didn't have a Valentine for that day. And I remembered something that a lady named Ruth Mathis, God bless her, who is dead now, taught me. She taught me that when women didn't feel good, or on special occasions, if they're friends of yours, take them a flower. And she told me, don't go to the cemetery and get them either. told her, well, they're free there. So we went and got some flowers. And I gave one to Annie. I gave one to Cricket. And I don't know how many of you watched Cricket last night with that rose. I had the opportunity to talk to her this morning before she left. We have a very special bond, her and I. A very special bond. And I have that with so many people. And it's all because of you people in this program who have taught me everything I know. Everything that I am today is because of you. Good, bad, or indifferent, it's because of you. The women in the program taught me so much and still do. Still do. Somebody said something to me last night about, boy, you're really going to have to turn it on tomorrow, Sonny, because you're behind all these women. I guess I was supposed to feel intimidated by the women. All them women are my friends. Every one of them that spoke are my friends. No intimidation. Sharon and I have known each other for 20 years. We don't see each other all the time, but we see each other enough. I don't feel intimidated by anybody. You know? I'm not scared of anything. And they said, well, coming from where you come from. I said, no, that has nothing to do with what I'm scared of or not scared of. Don't you understand? I have a God in my life today. I have faith. And I know how to get in the goddamn wheelbarrow. Huh? I know how to get in the wheelbarrow. That's trust. I learned that here from you people. I learned it from you people. I have people come up to me and tell me, Sonny, I just don't know what to do. This is going wrong and that's going wrong and blah, 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 blah. And I said, maybe you ought to go back and work the first three steps. But that ain't got nothing to ask. Why don't you go back and work the first three steps? Well, what's that guy? I said, go back and work the first three steps. Is that so hard? Get a pencil and a piece of paper and set your ass down and work the first three steps. And then I get a phone call. Are you all right? Yeah. Did it work? Yeah. And the only reason I know that it works is because that's what they told me. I did it by experience. Working the steps. So many people today do the Hazelden book. Write their steps in the Hazelden book and all that stuff. I didn't have a sponsor that was that goddamn lazy. They all told me we have the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, and for you people that are dumb, there's the 12 and 12 that explains it. And I used to get so mad because I didn't think that I was that dumb. And so I worked all those steps and continue to work them. I had a real hard time with 8 and 9. And I went to my sponsor, and my sponsor at that time was a guy by the name of Mike Ross, who passed on with 49 years of sobriety. And I told him, I said, Mike, I've got a real dilemma here. And he said, what's that, Sonny? I said, how do I make these amends for these people that I killed? And he said, good God, I never thought about it. He said, I really don't have an answer right now. But give me time, and I will find out how we can do this. Not how you can do it, but how we can do it. Because if you notice, it says we in there. I don't see an I in there anywhere. And so about 3 months later, he came back to me and he said, here. And he gave me an address. He said, I want you to go there. You spend a weekend there every month until things change. You will know when you're forgiven. And so I went out to this place, and it was a place for abused children. And I thought, what in the hell is this? And I walked up there to the steps, and there was this little boy that was about 7 years old sitting there, and he said, are you Sonny? And I said, yeah, who are you? He said, don't make no difference. And he walked up and kicked me on my shins. And he ran off. And I chased that little shit down. And I caught him and I kicked him in his butt. And so every Friday that I went up there, there he was. Same thing. Month after month. And finally, one time I went up there and I went in the office and I told the woman that run that place, I said, this ain't working. She said, what do you mean it ain't working? I said, man, that's all we do is kick the shit out of each other. She looked at me and she smiled and she said, Sonny, where is he sitting every Friday that you come up here? I said, out on the front porch waiting on him. She said, why do you think he's sitting there? He knows exactly when you're coming. This is a kid who had been stuffed in a closet for 6 years. We became good friends. I was there for 8.5 years. And I'm still looking for this sign that everything's all right. One day, the people who were going to adopt this kid came up, and I had bought him a horse, and he was out riding. I taught him how to ride the horse, and he was out riding that horse. And he came in, and as he got in towards the corral, he stood up in the saddle, and I hollered at him, watch out, you're going to fall. And he got up to me, and he said, that's all right, you'll catch me. And I said, bullshit, I ain't gonna catch you. And so he just leaned over and fell. And naturally, I reached out and got him. And he threw his arms around me. And he told me that he loved me. And at that moment, I knew that I was forgiven. And now it was up to me. It was up to me. And him and I stay in touch all the time. He's with the family. He's kind of grown now. Good kid. Hell of a kid. And he keeps telling me the next time he sees me, he's going to kick the shit out of me. He's quite a character. Quite a character. And I keep thanking him for being in my life. Yeah. Because through him, I've learned so much. When I was in the penitentiary, I paid cartons of cigarettes to get an education, and which was real simple in there. I had a friend that worked in education. And I graduated high school, and they made me the valedictorian. And I whooped the shit out of this dude that done that, because I didn't know what a valedictorian was. And it didn't sound like anything I wanted to be. And then I got involved in a race riot, and they locked me down for 2 more years in a place called 4A up at... And while I was in there, there was a guy in there who was in protective custody, and he was in there, he was a professor at UC Berkeley. And so he got me an associate arts degree, and that was cool. I threatened to break his legs if he didn't, and then I told him I'd kill him if he didn't get me a correspondence and take it for me, and so he did. He got it all done in adolescent psychology. He got back at me. And when I left there, I only needed 9 more units for a BA degree. And I said, man, I ain't going to school. Mike Ross told me, he said, I want you to go get that BA degree. And so I went to Northridge over in California and got it. And graduated on the dean's list with a 4.0. Applied at UCLA for a master's, for the master's course, and they gave me a 4-year scholarship. And I transferred it to University of Arizona. And at nights for the first couple of years that I was in Arizona, nobody knew what I was doing. And sometimes during the day I went, and I finally graduated and got my master's in adolescent psychology. And in the next couple of years, I'm going to apply for my doctorate. And I'd like to work with kids, because that's all I am. They said, how come you didn't have a hard time, Sonny? I knew all that shit. I never had an opportunity to grow up. Started drinking and using when I was 8. By the time I was 9, I was locked up for the first time. I got to think that I was kind of a normal kid somewhere down there. Had a school teacher that turned me on to drugs and alcohol. And I think that's when my growth stopped. At 9 years old, I was in juvenile hall, been declared an incorrigible. 4 boys run up through that dorm and rape me because I was crying. 2 lessons that stayed with me for my life, for the rest of my life up until Alcoholics Anonymous, and that was that if you cried, it was a sign of weakness and people would take advantage of it. And that's what happened that night. Second one was that as I got up the next morning to walk down through there to go to the bathroom to wash my face, I couldn't hardly see because the eyes were beat so bad they were almost closed. And I happened to look over in a closet. There was a utility closet, and in there was a mop bucket. And it had a ringer, a metal ringer on it. And there was 2 screws holding the handle to that ringer, and I went in and got that ringer. And that my handle off that ringer, and I went up through that dorm, and I found them 4 boys. Second lesson I learned, the more violent that you were, the more people left you alone. If you wasn't scared of dying, they left you alone. And so that was to stay with me for an awful long time. Awful long time. And in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, I've learned so much, so much. All my life I ate with a tablespoon. And I came out of the penitentiary and I went on a date with this girl. It was a double date and it was a blind date. And she wanted to hold my hand. And I kept telling her, quit it. I'm here and I ain't going nowhere. You ain't got nothing to worry about. She said, I just want to hold your hand. I said, no. She wanted to sit next to me in the car. I said, why? There's plenty of room back here for 4 of us. It took a long time. There was a young girl I used to go to its meeting over in North Hollywood called Chandler. It was at a recovery center. And there was a little girl there, and her name was Lisa. And she used to come in, and she'd sit next to me, and she'd reach up and rub my neck. And it would just, oh, God, it'd drive me crazy. And I'd tell her, get your goddamn hand off me. And she said, I said, just get your hand off me. And we'd interrupt the meeting sometime. But she would do it every single day. And then one day she didn't do it. And I looked at her and said, is something wrong with you? I took time to work myself into a lot of things. Went to that, on that date, and we went to a restaurant to overlook the ocean and all that stuff, and I thought, well, this is nice. I looked down at the table, and there was silverware and dishes, and I thought, what the shit is this? And then I got scared. And when I got scared, I got mad. And I jumped up and went outside, and I was kicking on the tire of somebody's car. And luckily, not luckily, God doing for me what I couldn't do for myself. Some guy walked out behind me and he said, are you Sonny? And I said, yeah. And he said, are you all right? And I said, no. He said, what's the matter? And I said, it don't make no difference. I didn't want to tell him. And he said, talk to me, Sonny. Tell me what's going on. And I told him that I'd only ate with a tablespoon almost all my life. And I didn't know nothing about all them dishes and all that silver. He said, if you promise to come on back in here, me and my wife will come over and we'll sit down and we'll show you what all that shit's about. And they did. And I still ate my meal with a tablespoon. It's so much easier. Where I came from, they don't give you knives and forks. You can get them, but they don't give them to you. And I want to tell you that because of those kinds of things that happened in my early sobriety, today I can go anywhere, any restaurant, and I can sit down, and I know where everything belongs. And if it ain't right, I put it right. And I'm not scared. Not scared. And I go a lot of nice places. Bill took me out to some guy's ranch out here somewhere, out on the edge of Texas. And I was looking to see if we was going to fall off out there. But it was a nice place, good food. And I unwrapped my silverware, looked around to see how many people had theirs right. And there was only one at the table that had it right. And I put mine right. Nobody knew what I was doing. Nobody. These are little things that I notice today. I get up and I shave and I look in the mirror at Sonny and I tell Sonny, you know what? I love you. I truly do. I just love the hell out of you. People would think that's crazy or egotistical or shit. Uh-uh. That's the things that you people taught me to do. I love Sonny. I love Sonny. I love what you've made of Sonny, what God has done in my life. I don't give a shit what anybody else thinks. Your opinion of me don't mean squat. If I leave here today and you decide that, oh, I didn't like that guy. That's your problem, ain't mine. I'm going home and I'm going to sleep. I did what I was supposed to do. I came up here and I told you my story. I didn't come up here to talk to all of you. Because I know that they told me a long time ago, Norm Alfie told me, Sonny, you're not talking to everybody. You're talking to the one individual that God put in that room to hear your story. And you know, I know today that I have a story of hope. Because without hope, you can't come from where I came from to where I'm at today. You don't do that. And the hope comes from you people in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. One alcoholic sharing with another. How do we know we're not different if we don't hear something? I went to Huntsville Prison to speak. Oh, that's a nasty joint. Tough old boys down there. Bunch of cowboys. And I got up there, we were in the mess hall, and I looked down, and right over here was one of the biggest, blackest suckers I had ever seen in my life. And he must have had 100, 500 pounds of chain on. His ankles was gaffled, his hands was gaffled. And there was three goon squad standing around him. And I knew that he was somebody special. He was so damn big he took up two chairs. One for each cheek. And as I got to talking, I talk a lot different in there than I do out here. Yeah. But as I got to talking, I happened to look down at that guy and there's these big tears rolling down his cheeks. And I thought, oh my God. Oh Lord, I hope this guy don't go off. Now I've seen that happen. And then the little voice in my head said, oh, don't be a fool. What was it like when you heard what he's hearing? How did you feel when you heard hope for the first time? And I want to tell you that I understood exactly what he was going through. And after the meeting was over, I was standing there talking with some people and stuff, and the warden walked up to me and he said, Sonny, he said, this guy would like to talk to you a minute. And so I said, sure, no problem. And he said, have you ever been hugged by a black man? Well, that ain't the word they use, but that's kind of cleaning it up at Sunday morning. And I said, yeah. He said, can I give you a hug? And I said, yeah, but you keep your hands on my shoulders, boy. And he laughed. He laughed. And so did I. And we became friends. And he said, can I write to you? And I said, yeah, you can get my address from the warden. And so he started corresponding with me, and I started writing him back. He wanted to take his steps, and I said, okay. And he'd write his step, and he'd send it to me, and I'd write him back. And the next time I came to Texas to speak, I'd go down and see him. And we did that. And then I was coming over to Amarillo. And when at Amarillo, after Amarillo, I was going to go down to the prison to see him again. And he had just finished his fourth step, and he wanted to do his fifth step. Warden called me and told me that they'd had a riot down there and he'd been killed. And he said, we'd like to have you come down anyway, Sonny, if you would. So I said, sure. So they sent a helicopter for me and I went down there. And I went in and I talked to the guys, and after it was over, went up to the warden's office, and I stand there talking to the warden. And I was smiling, and the warden says, what's funny? I said, it ain't funny. I said, he died free. I said, Sonny, he was doing free. I said, you don't understand. The man died free inside. And until you know the workings of Alcoholics Anonymous, even those of you that are sitting here this morning, you will never understand that until you've finished your fourth step. Because that's where the freedom comes. I got on the plane and I was going home, and I fly a lot, and a lot of stewardesses know me, and there's a lot of them on there that are in our program. And
they take real good care of me on the plane. This one stewardess walked over, and I was sitting there, and the tears were just running down my cheek. And she sat down next to me, and she said, "Are you all right?" I said, "Yeah, I'm okay." She said, "What are you crying about?" I said, "A friend of mine just passed away." And I said, "But you don't understand. These aren't tears of pain. These are tears of joy." And she just looked at me kind of funny and got up and walked off. And that's all right. She don't have to understand. It's important that I do. And the next time I was in Texas was up in Sherman, Texas. I was up at the Borderline Convention. And this black lady came up to me and she said, "Sonny?" And I said, "Yeah." She said, "Do you know so-and-so?" And I said, "Yeah. Down in Huntsville." She said, "That was my son." And I'd like to take you to dinner. And we went to dinner. I was just over in Oklahoma City, and she was up there. She brought her other son to meet me. And I had a long talk with him. You know, there are times that I think that circuit speakers get to the point where they just don't want to go out there again. When the phone rings and they say, "Will you?" And you think, "Oh God, not again, not again." You know. And then something like that happens. And you know why you're doing what you're doing. And so you drag your ass up out of the chair or off that couch and you go. Get on that airplane one more time and you go. And once you get there, you're damn glad to be there. You know, because of all the people that you know. And the new people that you don't know, but you get to know. You know. In Tulsa, Oklahoma last year, I went up there to speak and I had a major heart attack. It jump-started me about three different times. And I told God, one time they had me come around there and I was laying there in the emergency room at the hospital and I said, "Oh God, you didn't bring me to Tulsa, Oklahoma for this shit." And, the nurse looked at me and she just started laughing. She said, "What's the matter with you?" I said, "Honey, you wouldn't understand." "It's all right. It's all right." And Bill Agee and his sponsor Joe came down from Oklahoma City and they heard that I was in the hospital and they came down. They brought a bunch of the old timers down there and they were standing around my bed praying and I thought, "Oh God, boy, this ought to look really good." And the girl counted everybody's sobriety and there was over 400 years of sobriety in my room. And the phone rang constantly. Constantly. People from all over the country that I knew that had heard. Because this is a real small family. Word travels quick. Friend and his wife came out from Columbus, Ohio. I said, "Why didn't you just call? You didn't have to put all that money out and drive, fly all this way out here." And they said, "We wanted to see you." And I said, "Oh, you want to know if I'm going to die and what I'm going to leave you?" He said, "You're such an asshole, son." And the phone would ring and ring and ring. And this little girl, they brought a girl in from one of the recovery houses, and her whole job was to, you know, see the people that came in, make sure they didn't stay too long. And to answer the telephone. Those of you who've been in the hospital know what I'm talking about. The nurses never put the hot telephone where you can get to it. Yeah. It's always out of reach. She answered the phone and she said, "God," she said, "who are you? People call you from everywhere." And she said, "There's a guy on the phone right now and I don't know if his name is Sydney or he's from Sydney. I can't understand how he talks." And it was a friend of mine that I'd made when I was down in Sydney, Australia. When I walked out of the penitentiary, I wasn't going to stay. I wasn't going to stay. All I wanted to do was get the parole officer off my back. Once he was gone, that was it. You people damn sure didn't have nothing I wanted. Nothing. I have a lot of friends today. And the reason that I have friends today is because I have learned to be a friend. I have learned to be a friend. I didn't come to Alcoholics Anonymous to get laid. And we have so many people who come here for that purpose. But if you watch them long enough, they don't stay. They don't stay. I don't have to say too much about that subject because God deals with it in His own way. He does it a whole lot better than I do. I have a lot of women friends, and I just love it. I love it. People come up to me and say, "Sonny, God damn, all the women come over and hug you and kiss on you and all that jazz. That's pretty neat, eh?" And they say, "What are you doing? What?" And I said, "Nothing. I think it's because I'm safe." What do you think, Al? I want to tell each and every one of you here this morning, I love you all. I truly do. I love all of you. And that don't mean I won't take any of you to bed. Although I've seen a few that... Hell of a temptation. But I want to tell you that I love you because God tells me I have to. You see, if God loves you, who in the hell am I not to? I am so grateful for the gift that He's given me. And the opportunities that He gives me to go out and meet new people and to share my experience, strength, and hope with you. I live in a town in Scottsdale, Arizona. And that's where the elite meet to eat, I guess. I don't know. There's a lot of wealthy people there. And I don't much give a shit who they are. You know, don't make me no different. I'm just Sonny. Live in a nice house. Got a swimming pool in the backyard. The weather's great. And I can walk down the street to go play golf. I play golf today. And I don't keep score. People say, "Why don't you keep score, son?" It's because I don't want to resent it. I just want to enjoy playing golf. Early on when I was first learning, Mike Ross told me, said, "I want you to go down to Palm Springs this weekend and sign up for that golf tournament. Why don't you get out there and play golf with them guys?" I said, "I'm not that good." He said, "I don't give a shit. I want you to do that." I said, "Okay." So I went on down there and I signed up, and they put me in a foursome with three guys in the program who were very serious about the game of golf. And I was just tripping along. And I was riding with this one guy, and he was just pissing him on, and he'd throwed three clubs away already. And we're about halfway through the game, I guess, and this golf cart came up, and it was loaded with all kinds of soft drinks and everything. I thought, "Whoa, check this out. This is nice. Service on the golf course and everything." I thought, "Damn." One guy turned to me, and he said, "Sonny, how are you doing?" I said, "I'm doing fantastic." He said, "What's your score?" I said, "Score." He said, "Yeah. Aren't you keeping score?" And I said, "Hell no." I said, "I'm having too much fun." I've been watching you guys. And you're keeping score. And I ain't doing that. These golf clubs cost too goddamn much money. And I said, besides, I'm in the middle of a golf course in Palm Springs, California, playing with guys like you. How could I not be having a good time? They didn't have a golf course at Folsom. And they didn't have no real girls running around up there bringing you soft drinks. I have a year and 6 days inside the joint, clean and sober. A guy come up to me one time at a meeting and said, Sonny, didn't anybody ever tell you that you can't count your time inside the joint? I looked at him. And I said, have you ever been to the penitentiary? He said, no. And I reached over and whispered in his ear, if you don't get away from me, I'm going to break your goddamn neck. If you haven't been there and done that, please don't come to me with your opinion. See? Don't come to me with your opinion. I don't know how many of you have one, but I have a book called Concordance on Alcoholics Anonymous. And I listen to a lot of speakers who spew a lot of things about Alcoholics Anonymous and about the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And when I get home, I sit down and I go through my concordance and I find out if they're full of shit or not. And you'd be surprised at how many people take out of context what's in the book. And when you take it off the black lines and put it into the gray lines, it's never the right thing. It don't fit. You can't take a round peg and put it in a square hole unless you got a heavy hand. And I found a lot of people in Alcoholics Anonymous who do that or try to do that. We don't need opinions here. We need facts. Our lives depend on it. People come up to me and say, Sonny, I haven't been to a meeting all week. Oh, what have you been doing? I've been busy. I have a wife. I have a job. I have all that stuff. And I have some responsibilities. Oh, cool. Didn't go to a meeting last night because I went to the movie. I had a sponsor told me one time, Bill Honeycutt, never forget him. Little short, fat, bald-headed dude. Came into penitentiary one time and stood up behind the podium in the penitentiary and he said, my name used to be Booger Red and there wasn't nothing wrong with me that $100 bill wouldn't fix. I said, I got to listen to this guy. He taught me so much. He was one of the most kind-heartedest people with the roughest edges I have ever run into in my life. I told him, I said, I want to go to a movie tonight. Let's go to a movie instead of that meeting. He said, well, the next time you want a drink, go to a meeting. Or go to the movie. Don't go to a meeting. Go to the movie and see if it'll keep you sober. Dummy. He used to stick his finger in my chest. He told me one time, he said, Sonny, I want to tell you about Alcoholics Anonymous. I said, oh, God, Bill. He said, this is a program of the heart. He said, it's where the heart speaks and where the heart listens. And if you'll always remember that, you'll be able to hear so much. And ain't it true? Ain't it true? So many times we go to meetings and we listen to people talking from up here. And it's so scattered and so full of shit. And then when you hear somebody talking from in here, you sit up your ears perk up, and you listen. How true it is. It's where the heart speaks and where the heart listens. And he told me there's just no good or bad people in this program. There's just people who know and people who don't know. Every once in a while I run into a couple of those that don't know. And I tell them, you should get to know what's going on. But I love Alcoholics Anonymous, man. And people say, look at that person doing that, and look at that person doing that, and she's with him and he's with her, and they're doing this and they're doing that. Who gives a shit? You know, it's like the president. All this shit about the president. I think that prosecutor, whatever the hell he is, must be gay. Either that or he's jealous. I don't understand that stuff. I don't understand. I think what it is when we talk about each other in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, it's that we don't want to look at ourselves. And in reality, that's what we're doing. Because when we see things that are going on out there with other people that we don't like, it's something that's inside of us. See, it's something that's inside of us. Otherwise, how would we know? How would we know? People don't come to me with them stories about who's sleeping with who or doing what to who and all that stuff no more. They just don't. And I'm glad. Because I really don't give a shit. If it ain't me sleeping with them, I ain't interested. If I'm sleeping with him, you don't know it. I get to go out of town too much. I love Alcoholics Anonymous, and I love all you people. And I want to tell you that you people who have put on this jamboree it is have done a fantastic job. I've been all over. You've treated me great. You gave me a guy that, he's all right. Al is all right. I found out that everybody makes fun of Al. So why not me? Yeah. And Beverly, I hope my diction was right. I hope the way that I carried myself was okay. She told me that she was responsible for me. I love you, darling. I love you. And this old girl here, Rosemarie, honey, thank you for being here. Thank you so much for being here. I sat there Friday night, and I heard this weird noise. And I couldn't figure out, what in the hell is that? And I looked over there, and there she was, and she had a big smile on her face. And I thought, all right. And then I told her how much I appreciated that, and she said, it runs in the family. God. Oh, boy. I'll bet that's fun. But I just love it. I just love it. You come to these conventions and you just pick out certain people, you know, that kind of stand out in your mind. You know. There was a guy last night, he's sitting over here. I think his name is Mel, is it? Yeah, the guy with his hand up. We were standing out there and he was telling me how this program worked, I think. And I was kind of short with him. You know, I fall into that mode sometimes. And I want to apologize for that. I didn't mean to. If your feelings were hurt, tough shit. Seriously. You know what? I love you guys. I really do. And those of you that came up and talked to me and trying to figure out who I was and all that shit, that's all right. You know, that's what I like about speaking at the end of a convention. Nobody knows what you're about. So it's too late at the end of the convention anyway to find out what I'm about because I'm gone. I love you. I love El Paso. It's been good. And you people are good. God love you.